Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's brand new day disinfecting wipes conveniently tackle surfaces, including remotes, tablets, and smartphones, killing 99.9% of viruses and bacteria with a fragrance that feels like a tropical getaway for your senses. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
I'm in total control of the situation because they're only getting to see me for when I'm on stage. So I can be like, all right, I'm going to portray this person. I'm going to portray how I'm feeling right now to these people. And that's how they're going to interpret me.
Welcome to 94 and More, a podcast presented by Bristol Studio. I'm your host, Jake Fenster, and I'm joined by my co-host, Vic Law, who's supposed to say something there, but I don't know if he wants to jump in.
All right, we're live, baby.
And today, our guest is Henry Hall. Henry, thanks for joining the show.
I could not be happier.
What a way to start the show.
No, it is good, honestly. I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I listen to like two podcasts, but I listen to every single episode, and it's always nice when they change up the intro a little bit. I'm down for one of the hosts to not respond to their introduction.
He's big time now. He got his first win in the NBL, and now he's hard to get a response from.
Can't even get. He's spending too much cheese
now.
He's on the Great Barrier Reef.
That's not even close.
Is that true?
And on top of that, it's in my state, but it's like way north.
Okay, wait. Can you quickly explain that?
So I'm in Queensland. Like the state that I'm in is Queensland. Right. I'm in the city of Brisbane, but the Great Barrier Reef is in a city called Cairns. It's like way at the top of Queensland. So it's like a 9-hour drive.
Okay, I see. So that's
and
like
even
saying,
even then.
Yeah,
like LA to San Fran, or like longer than that. Like you have to like go out to get to the Great Barrier Reef. Like you get on a boat for about 40 minutes to go out to it. It's just like you can like can't just swim and see it.
Which you is what I thought was. You can't just doggy paddle out to the.
That's what I was thinking. Like you just kind of run in the water, dive in, and you swim out a little bit. You can start seeing it. Nah, you got to go like miles into the ocean.
Well, I actually didn't know that. That's pretty wild. I bet a lot of people like go to Australia like tourists and they're like, all right, like about to walk out to the Great Barrier Reef. Oh, never mind.
Another funny thing, you actually aren't supposed to, like, you can see it, but it's dangerous to do it. Because saltwater crocodiles are very active in that area.
No.
Oh my god.
They're like the most aggressive like crocodile in the world.
Not a saltwater crocodile.
No, they eat it. They eat anything, and they're like apparently like there are like seasons during the year where there are tons of them on the beach. They just like sit on the beach
chilling.
Yeah,
dude. One time, not to like start us off on like a bunch of nonsense. Oh,
you're good.
Here,
you're good. You're good.
So I was in Costa Rica once surfing. Go out to this wave. Really fun, have like a fantastic time, great session as it's called. Come in, guy who took us there or whatever was like, oh man, like that was fun, we got lucky though. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, oh, usually like at least one person has an encounter with a gator
really?
At that spot. I swear. I was like,
afterward.
Oh, you don't say.
Oh,
you didn't say. Yeah.
Yeah. That's well, I'm glad I know that now that I was just literally survived. My life was in danger 5 minutes ago. Fantastic. Yeah.
Well, I'll bring it back a little bit.
Yeah.
This is definitely a unique episode because I guess you're the first person on this podcast up to this point that isn't really associated with basketball. But, you know, nevertheless, our relationship is really through the game and kind of, you know, through Charlie, your brother, who yep. was on an earlier episode. I'd hope so. can you kind of speak to us and kind of share more about what you do and some of the things that you have accomplished?
Yeah, sure. So, contrary to popular belief, I wasn't drafted into the NBA, and I wasn't recruited to play college basketball.
Welcome to the club. Welcome to the club, baby.
So my name's Henry, and I live in Los Angeles, California, and I'm a musician, and pretty much spend all day thinking of depressing lyrics to sing and playing a lot of bass these days. And I just put out an album recently within the last couple months called Nido, which was my debut full length.
Which is fire, by the way. I've actually put it up my teammates onto
Thank
it.
You.
It's actually it's For real? Really well done.
That's good. Thank
yeah,
you.
I mean, your other works have been shit, but this one was all
right. I finally rose above.
Yeah. What has that been like? We can start there. What has that been like for you putting out that album kind of in the middle of a pandemic with so much going on? And I know from the people that I know in music, everyone kind of was like, this is the worst time to be putting out an album, unless you're Drake. Dude.
Right. Which, I again,
there is no time.
Yeah. I'm not Drake.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, man. Honestly, like, I think at the beginning of lockdown, of the pandemic, when people had sort of no idea what the future held, not that we really do still, but it was completely up in the air what was going on. I think a lot of music was pushed and releases were delayed. But then I think once we got like 6 months into it, people kind of said, well, this feels like the way things are going to be for a while. There's nothing else we can do other than record music because you can't play shows. Right. So we might as well record music and release music because people are just sitting in their homes on their computer, waiting, burning through The Sopranos for the 90th time. They want, who doesn't want a new album? So I, you know, that's sort of where I came from with it. And I think also too, like, it's kind of corny, but it's just true. Like, I had been sitting on these songs for a while, and I kind of felt in my heart that I had to put them out.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you reach a certain point where you say, okay, for me as an artist, in order to grow, I have to release this music because otherwise I'm going to be stagnant and like stay in the same place, like artistically, creatively. So I was like, screw it. I'm going to do what I had been planning to, you know, I had a whole plan to like do release shows and how I was going to like go about. Rolling it out. Yeah, exactly. And all that stuff. And
hey, Henry, random question, musician question. Hearing you say that, what are your thoughts on like artists that like just make a ton of music and then just stash it?
That's a good question.
Rappers say like, I got like 200 songs that I haven't released yet.
Right. Or like the Dre, what's that like Dre album that he's been working on for like 3 decades? Like, I forget what it's called.
Yeah, I've heard it too.
Whatever. But there's like this, that legend that like he has this album that has all these features. It's the best album ever.
Right.
Like everyone's waiting for him to put it out and all that. I think it's honestly, dude, it's like, it's a to each his own kind of thing. That's the only, everyone, because there's no, especially in music, because there's a music industry, but there's no infrastructure at all to it anymore.
Right.
It's the most random in terms of who has success and who doesn't of like any of the entertainment industries, I think, because in film and TV, you still have the studio system, you know,
right.
You have these streaming services that it's not like any, you know, anyone, like I actually have as much access or as much, I potentially have as wide of a breadth of an audience as Drake, for example, like, because he puts his songs on Spotify and so do I, know, like that's the movie theater, so to speak. So I think that because of that, it's just sort of that filters down to how people release music as well. Like I think people can play it. That's it's a blessing and a curse, you know, because you can play it however you want. Like you can play it like someone who's like Frank Ocean, who just puts out an album, then he is a hermit for like 6 years, you know, and that works for him. Or you can be Gucci Mane and put out a full length album every month for 5 years, you know. I've sort of found that, that's like the biggest stressor, like of my, you really hit a soft spot there, Vic.
Oh, did
I? I started crying right now, yeah.
The hard-hitting questions.
It's a hard-hitting, it kind of is, honestly, because it's like, you know, with this album as an example, I was like, okay, I have no control, really, over whether or not it's going to be successful, who's going to hear this. It's the only thing that I have to go by is what works for me, what makes me feel good. And I was like, putting this album out is going to make me feel good and fulfilled, you know? So yeah, that's how it is.
You kind of brought it up earlier, and I know from my experience, just in what we do at Bristol and for other artists that I've talked to, you're kind of working ahead, right? So the music that we're hearing, like Nido, is music you've recorded a long time ago. You're kind of sick of it in a way, right? Because it's something you've listened to, you've worked on, you've beaten your head against the wall about it, you've rewritten it, like all those things have gone into it, and then finally it's released and you're already working on new music or new projects. So how much of that was part of, I need to put this out because this is not where I'm at as an artist anymore, I need to release it and continue to, you know, mature and grow? Was that part of that thought process?
I think it was to a degree. I've thought about this before too, and I have like a sort of a metaphor that works perfectly for it, which is, if you imagine like a piece of taffy, basically, right? And depending on how you're stretching it, it's going to like droop at certain points, but then it'll rise again if you like stretch it more, you know, and become like taut in certain spots as well. And like, I find that with an album, so it's sort of like, it's alive and it's dead. It's alive and it's dead. You know, it's like taut or drooping, taut or drooping. So it's like, for me, the process of with this record was like, all right, I write the songs and the taffy's very taut. Like I'm feeling super vital, like alive with it. Right. Cause I'm like loving the music. And then like I'm recording it and mixing it, and then it kind of droops. Like I kind of am like, because it's a slog, you know? That's just like, it's like some busy work kind of going with it. And then I finish the recording and I'm like, oh, amazing. Like I feel so good because it's like a finished product. And so it's taut again. And then I have to go through the rigmarole of like, okay, how am I going to put this out? Am I going to work with a manager, a PR company, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So then it like kind of dies again. And then when I put it out, it sort of is born again, like it has another life to it. So I think I was wary of not waiting too long so that the music really died for me, like emotion, like it didn't have any impact for me anymore because it was so sort of in the past, you know. I was like, I sort of said to myself like, all right, I got to be careful, and I have to put this, like I have to not wait too long, and I have to put this out now so that I'm not like sick of it for the rest of my life. You know?
And you brought up an interesting point. I want to kind of ask more about, how has the business side of music and the music industry affected you as an artist, and kind of walk us through, maybe, you know, if you're signed to a label If you do have managers or agents and all of that, kind of how that's worked for you and what you like and dislike, just that whole process.
Yeah, I'm so I've worked with a record company before, Verve, they're called, but it didn't really work out. We just sort of like went in different directions creatively. So with Nido,
You saw yourself as one type of artist and they saw you as another type of artist?
I guess so. It was sort of like I would compare it to like selling a script, like, you know, where you get an option where it's like they buy the script and they own it for a certain amount of time. But then if they can't find the right audience for it, they can't sell it, like whatever, then you get it back basically. Got you. So like that's sort of what happened with the record label to some degree. So now I'm pretty much 100% independent. I work with some PR, just to like basically get on like a good email list. and not that I'm belittling the help that they do for me. They're really helpful, but
yeah,
you know, it's important to have someone on your side to like navigate the press.
Speaking to that, you were on Jimmy Fallon. What was that? 2 weeks ago?
I was. I didn't shout either of you out. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. But how did that process? How did that go? How did that come about? Was that through the PR agency?
I mean, he just bullies his way on the podcast, but when he has a chance to talk about 94 and more, nope, never heard of it.
Yeah, I skirted that. They were like, "Could you tell us about 94 and more? Are you doing that podcast?" I was like, "I'm not talking about that. Sorry,
never heard of it.
Never heard.
Won't speak on it."
Yeah,
but yeah, what was that like?
Yeah, dude, that was pretty surreal. That was like a career life goal come true. Basically, what happened was I got pitched to Fallon, just like
through the PR agency that you work with.
Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, you would through to any other outlet, and they listened and liked it. And they're like, yeah, let's have you on the show. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, I was really surprised.
Yeah.
But you know, Fallon, they sort of put on a lot of, like they co-sign a lot of like smaller artists and give a lot of people breaks, which is amazing and like rare these days, I think. It's sort of part of their identity, and I think it's a very admirable thing. They basically reached out and they were like, yeah, okay, we're gonna have you on like on this date, so put something together, and you know, here are like a few specifics of like what the video like what the MP4 like the .mov like file should be, and good luck.
So they didn't give you any like outside assistance. They kind of just told you, this is the content format we need in order to air it on the show. Good luck. Figure it out. Do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's pretty awesome. Like they kind of give you like a totally open canvas. They're like, all right, have like 3.5 minutes on our show to do what you want to do. Like play whatever song you want. Like they didn't, no specification about anything. And
no cursing, though. You couldn't curse.
No cursing. That's true. I did have to say F off.
Which is the toughest part, because that's my favorite part of that song.
I know.
When you say fuck off and you had to change it to F off, which is still great, but I definitely remember listening to that and noticing.
Yeah. You'll get it. The music video is coming soon.
Okay, cool.
So you'll get the actual fuck in the video. Yeah. Yeah, dude. I mean, it was great. And it was also like such a boon creatively for me, because I got to like fucking play with a band.
Yeah.
And rehearse, which I hadn't done in months because of the pandemic.
Right.
Yeah, dude, it was awesome. We went up to Santa Barbara and shot it up there. My two friends, Ethan Young and Hannah Baker, directed, who are both like insanely talented. I like could not have done it without them. They like really, put the whole project together, and Dylan Bostick, who produced Nido, produced the track, or like, you know, he like recorded what we did, and we did a few takes and then smushed together the things we liked, and that was it.
So what, when you, you know, when it finished all of it, what was it like watching it? Like, did you guys all kind of go to one of your houses and, like, you know, I can only imagine, like, if I were to, like, record something like that and be on a show, like, if I did SNL and I knew it was going to, like, air next week, I'd be like, well, I'd have, like, a full little party to watch it.
Well, you would if there wasn't the threat, the looming threat of a novel virus.
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously, but I'm saying, like, you and your band.
Oh, yeah, no.
Or, like, small group.
Dude, unfortunately, I literally watched it with Charlie and my girlfriend Grace.
Like, that's not that's not a bad way. That's not a bad way to do it.
It was great, but yeah, no, we couldn't. But believe me, the FaceTime was popping on. Yeah. Many parties involved on the FaceTime, screaming on the FaceTime.
but you had said, you said that that's kind of like a lifelong, you know, dream. And I want to ask more about that, kind of taking it back to the early days. Was music something that you always loved and always were picking up new instruments? And what was that like for you? Did you teach yourself everything? Did you take lessons?
Yeah, I took guitar lessons pretty much my whole life, primarily like jazz guitar, as you know, because we went to the same high school, Crossroads. We have a very, what's the word I'm looking for right now?
Are you talking about the arts programs, the musical?
Yeah, dude. Jazz, we prestigious.
Jazz program? Prestigious? Jeez. Oh, the prestigious jazz program.
Little moment there. Yeah, very prestigious jazz program, which I was a part of. And and that's how I sort of like learn my chops, like with guitar, you know? Yeah, I don't know. There was something, I think my guitar, I sort of like developed my songwriting and my style of guitar playing separate from like what I was learning in lessons and at school, because I sort of, I didn't have the greatest time in the jazz program. I mean, nothing against them personally or anything, obviously, but it just wasn't really, I was never like the biggest jazz person. So it always felt like a little like rebellious to be like playing rock guitar and like writing my own, like, you know, basically very generally rock music. So, but I always like sort of felt like, I was like, oh, okay, like a little bit of jazzy stuff is getting in here and there. And you know, there's so many different types of chords that come along with jazz guitar that are not really present in rock, and that kind of helped give a little bit of a different flavor to my guitar playing at an early age.
I'm curious though, like, was this something that you just kind of stumbled into on your own? Were your parents, because from my knowledge, I mean, your parents are in entertainment, and we kind of discussed that with Charlie on the previous episode, but were they pushing you towards music, or they kind of just let you find it, or what was that?
No, I mean, no, honestly, they let me come to it naturally. They're both very musical people, especially my dad. If you spend more than 20 minutes in my house, you'll either hear him play piano or guitar or sing like a Beatles song or something. So he was a huge influence, and he showed me a lot of stuff early on that I still listen to today, like that had a big impact on my songwriting, like the Smiths and Simon and Garfunkel and people like this, you know, like James Brown, Sly, Parliament, people like that. So yeah, I mean, he never was like, you need to play music.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually not true. I'm definitely forced into some piano lessons like very early on.
I think we all were.
That was just for like some cuteness points.
Yeah.
Cause nothing hypes up a parent more than the old camcorder at the piano recital. It's a must.
Yeah. So on that point, do you have a favorite band or artist that you kind of have used to guide you as you find out more and more about who you are as an artist?
It's hard to pick one.
You can pick a couple.
Growing up, the Smiths were pretty big.
That's Vic's lyrics. Favorite band. As you can tell by Vic's response, that's his favorite band.
I don't know who that is. is.
They're basically, they're like a 80s sort of like, they're sort of like the original like indie rock band, I would say.
Okay.
Kind of. They're like, okay. They're from like Manchester, England.
Right.
And their lyrics are like super duper emo, but like kind of fun, kind of like very witty, also very English seeming, you know what I mean? Okay. Like very like their lead singer, this guy Morrissey, who like has had a lot of, he's found himself in some hot water, like politically as of late. Okay. But back then he was like, his sexuality was like up in the air. He had a sort of very like, his voice was like a little bit more like feminine, and his lyrics were like sort of more like highfalutin and like had a sense of humor to them. Like, very like, it had like a wink to them, like in a, in a way, like it, like a lyric would be like in one of their songs, he says, "When I'm lying in my bed, I think about life and I think about death, and neither one particularly appeals to me." It's like stuff like that, you know, and like he sings it, but the melody is like really like happy go lucky, but he like sings a lyric like that, you know what I mean? It's like a very a lot of juxtaposition kind of with the Smiths. And you know, when you're like 16, when you're like a music obsessed like 16, 17 year old and you hear that, you're like, holy shit, this is good. You're like, this fucking bangs.
So did you kind of want that? Like, did you, do you want that like rock star kind of vibe? Is that like a dream of yours?
I don't know. Honestly.
To be like a Mick Jagger?
I'm more interested in like making music that makes people feel that feel, you know, when you like hear a song that you really love and there's not really anything like it. It's like better than watching a movie you love. It's like better than like watching your favorite team like win.
You just play the hell out of it. You play it like 30 times.
Yeah, you could literally listen to it 30, like you can't watch a movie 30 times in a row. You know, you can't like, I mean, you can, I guess, but like, you know what I mean? There's like, there's something to a song you love. And like, that's what I'm really after. I want to write song. There's songwriting is really the thing that I am drawn to the most. And like, I want to write songs like that where people feel that way for them. You know, I'm not I'm not dying to be like, to have like the rock star like vibe, like that energy necessarily. I mean, it's cool, but like I'm not like feeding for it.
Right,
you know what I mean?
So let's say looking forward to the next 5 years, right? I know you just put out this project and I'm sure you're already working on upcoming projects and things that you want to bring to life. So what does the next 5 years look like to you? If it could all go as planned in your head, what does that look like?
Great question. I feel like that's a common one, but it holds a lot more weight nowadays.
Yeah.
Especially because the live music industry has been hit like one of the hardest of anything, like during the pandemic. I hope that I can be touring, because that's my favorite thing in the world to do, is play shows.
What about it specifically for you?
You know, for me, dude, like I'm an introvert. I think people sometimes think that I'm extroverted because I'm like cracking jokes or something, but I'm actually quite introverted. Like to me, the definition of like an introvert.
That's interesting.
An extrovert is someone who like gets energy from like, or feels energized by being around other people, but they can be shy, you know?
Yeah.
But they just like to be, that is what gives them energy, is like going to the party, like being around a big group, like whatever it might be. Like Charlie is an extrovert.
Yeah.
But me, for sure. Like I don't, when I'm around people in a big group and I'm like, I feel the impulse to entertain and to like give, joke, make everybody laugh, make everybody feel good. But then afterwards I need to be by myself for like 48 hours. You know, I have to take it draining. In like small doses, you know, like,
so then,
like,
was it? Yeah,
I'm sure Vic, like, I, you know, like I remember when Vic was visiting in LA, or whenever anyone visits it like is staying with like in my house, when like Vic was visiting with Charlie, It's like I could hang out with them for like an hour and like be really on and like totally fully engaged and like having a great time. But then like I have to go. Like I can't take it for more than that with anybody, you know. I'm like I'm over it, like immediately, you know. Not immediately, but like it's
after an hour.
I have limited capacity, and for me, performing like it fits into that same formula because like I can be on stage and I give.
And then you're gone,
you know. And then it's done, and I go like I fucking hate the after party. You know, like after a show, like I'm like, when the show ends, dude, I'm like, okay. Like I literally, my mind switches immediately goes to how am I going to get out of this after party? How? Like the thing that actually makes me the most anxious of at a show is like, okay, who's here? Who do I have to say hi to after? What is going to be the dynamic after the show? The show itself, I'm down. Like it's very clear cut what it needs to be. It's like, I need to be on stage giving my all for 45 minutes. I can do that. No problem. In fact, I love to do that. But then after I'm done, like I had a bandmate in college who was sort of like the opposite. Like he loved the show, but the thing he really loved was like partying afterwards, like going to the party after and like socializing and like,
sounds like Vic.
Mingling and networking and all that, you know? Yeah. Where do you guys fall on that scale, would you say?
Well, Jake just threw me under the bus and just said I'm the after party guy. No, so I guess an example would be like we won yesterday, right? And
and I got a text pretty quickly about the after
party. It was the whole day was the after party.
Yeah.
But
and are you like were you looking forward to that? Like when you won, were you like, yes, we get to party?
A bit. Like yeah, I just wanted to win. Fine. And once we won, it was like, oh my God. And it was, so just putting it in perspective, yesterday was also their Independence Day.
Oh shit.
So it was, like a ton of, you know, everyone had the day off type of thing. We played at 2 p.m. It was, their Independence Day is weird because it has racial undertones that, like, kind of like with our Columbus Day, when we kind of like kick Native Americans in. Their Independence Day is when their Aboriginals kind of were forced, you know, kind of marginalized and forced off. So their Independence Day is interesting and weird and has different dynamics. I'm not educated enough to really speak that deeply on it.
It's a mixed emotions though.
Yeah, definitely.
At least.
So, but I do know our game was sold out because everyone had the day off. It was at 2 p.m. and we beat a good team. And we had the rest of the day and today off. So I didn't know that.
he texted me. So Vic texted me before the game. He said, today's about to be a breakout game for me. So now having all this, you did.
No, I didn't. I'm saying, yeah, absolutely. Well, a tradition with the team, when you win, you drink a beer.
Oh, yeah, of course.
This is like this incredible. I love this team. Yeah. We need to win every fucking game then.
No, I mean, I'm sure you guys had a good time. But for me, I think I like the idea of the after party. I'm always like excited about the idea of the after party. But I think like, let's say there was an event or like a big thing before the after party.
Yeah.
I'm usually very drained by the time that we get to the after party. Mm-hmm. So like, it could go one of two ways. It could go either way. I could be fully up for it or I could be like wiped out and just sitting at a table like chilling. But the idea of the after party is something like I always welcome. But I think like you talking about performing and obviously Vic playing a basketball game, like those things to me just take so much out of you. So I can't really imagine what that is like. You know, I've never had to perform on a stage in front of a crowd of people. And I'm curious for you, what makes you more nervous, performing for people that you know or performing for people that you don't know?
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. That's a good question. Dude, for sure, people that I know, 100%.
How come? Because you care what they think or what their opinion might be or how they respond?
They
or
see the full picture. They see the full context. Yeah. It's less of
you're a saying like, if you're saying like if your family's there, you're more nervous than if it's just a random show in Indianapolis or something.
100%. Because those random people in Indianapolis – I'm in total control of the situation because they're only getting to see me for when I'm on stage. So I can be like, all right, I'm going to portray this person. I'm going to portray how I'm feeling right now to these people. And that's how they're going to interpret me. Whereas honestly, the most nervous that I get is when my parents are like, oh, Henry, can you play a song for us? Like when my aunt and uncle are in town or something, like an extended fan, people who know me and who are close to me. I'm afraid.
And who are going to judge the fuck out of you.
Yeah. Yeah. For real. Because they have the context, they have other information.
Yeah.
And I don't want them. Also, a lot of my songs are kind of grim, you know, they can be depressing as hell. And I don't want to scare my family a little bit. I know that sounds dramatic, but I'm a little bit I don't want to I want to hold
do
back
too much
here.
Yeah.
I don't want to make them think something's wrong.
Right.
You know? So I have to sort of chill. I can't go fully, I can't go.
How you want to go. Right.
That affects you more in your performance than, you know, if you're up there in front of a bunch of random people, you don't care. You're doing your whole thing.
Yeah. I can let go, you know, let loose. I'm not as tight up, you know, tense feeling.
I guess going along with that, two things. Well, I would say going along with the extrovert introvert thing.
Yeah.
Jake is a good mix of both. I think definitely work hard, play hard type of guy. But once that battery hits zero, it's got to recharge.
Crash. Whereas
I feel like when I start getting low, I can still probably go through the night. You know, obviously, I'm getting older, I'm slowing down. Like a night out hits me way harder than the next morning than it used to.
Not a 19-year-old.
My God. But so tell us about you used to say your songs are grim. Tell me where your inspiration for your music comes from, and what do you think your identity as an artist, what are you singing or writing about? Is there a thing that is what you write about or?
Yeah, I think, because my background really is in guitar, for the most part, 90% of my songs start with chords, guitar melody or chords.
Mm-hmm.
And then to sort of fill in the spaces, of what I want to sing, I start to sing random words, and a word here and there kind of catches my eye or whatever mind. Mm-hmm. And then that's the tangent that I follow, and that becomes the song. I very rarely am walking on the street and I see a tree that's green and I'm like, oh, the green tree song. You know, right. I don't think of a lyric and then write the song. That's happened a handful of times only. And I rarely have songs too where I'm like, oh, I want to write a song about, it comes organically and it starts with melody. It doesn't start with subject matter.
Lyrics,
yeah. No, not really. I mean, you know, I've had times where I think of a melody and I've got some chords and I'm kind of singing along, kind of vamping on something. Mm. And then I'm like, oh, what was that one little phrase I heard or thought of the other day? And then that gets plugged in to what I've thought of.
Well, what's interesting is I think when we were in Santa Barbara, I think I actually saw you in a process of, we were just sitting by the pool and you had your guitar, you had something, you're strumming something and humming and singing to yourself. And
I was probably hitting the voice memos, dude. That's my number one songwriting tool is I record on my phone little 15, 20 second diddlies. And then I'll forget about them. And then 2 weeks later, I'm going through my voice memos and I hear a little something and I'm like, oh, I kind of like that. And then it becomes a song. It's like, it's kind
of. Do you ever write it down, or is it always the phone? Like, you have like a little notebook that's like, this is like Henry's like gyms.
Yeah. So it's funny. Like, I've tried to do that because I think like aesthetically that's super appealing.
Yeah.
To like
you walk
like
around with a little notebook.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. With like my little notepad, like writing stuff.
And you don't let anyone see it. You seal it, the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. I was actually watching a Simpsons the other day, Simpsons episode where Lisa gets a diary that like has this function where like if someone opens it who that like doesn't own the diary, it closes and goes access denied and then shocks the person. So Homer like
so you need that
up and he's like getting shocked. Yeah, no, I don't have one of those. Anyway, but I've had like probably like a 15 times like try to start like a little notebook, but I never like keep it up. I write it in my notes in my like notes app.
Right? Oh, okay. Yeah.
On that point, for you when you want to write music, right? Is it something that just happens naturally where you're not thinking, oh, I need to write a song right now? You just kind of, you feel that urge or you feel something and then you go to your notes or your voice memo, or do you find yourself like, I'm going to sit down for 3 hours today and I'm going to play my guitar and write songs? How do you go about that?
It's 80% of the time organic but it always starts with picking up the guitar.
Yeah.
Always. Like, I just like to play guitar. Vic, I'm sure you feel this way with basketball. It's like I'm feeling a little like something. I need to let out a little like energy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go to the gym for sure. And like put up some shots. Mm-hmm. It's the same exact thing for me.
Yeah.
I'm like, I get home and I'm like, I have like the urge to play guitar. So I do.
Yeah.
And if I don't get sick of it within the first like few minutes, then something will come and like I'll write something. I sometimes though, like on the rare occasion, I'll go like a month without writing anything. And I'm like, oh fuck, I haven't written anything in a while. So I do that where I'm like, okay, I need to take an hour here and like write something, even if it's trash.
Just bring yourself back to that kind of mind state.
Yes.
Do you have anyone else that will help you write, or is it just all you?
It's all me, isolated.
The independent artist.
In my little cave. Yeah. I do all the writing. My friend Dylan helps me with production, though, because I don't really, I mean, I kind of know what I'm doing, but he's like an actual professional producer and mixer.
That helps. Yeah.
So I hit, when I'm hitting the studio, I do it with him. Yeah.
So what, like a random go ahead, Jake. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Random question. Is there like as an artist, is there like, you know, as you kind of continue to build your reputation and build your image, is there any artist you want to like have like a feature with on one of your songs that you'd like if Drake was like, Henry, I want you to jump on this summer banger I got?
I mean, what if I was like,
nah. Yeah, I'm good. Nah. That would be next level.
That would be
that. If you turn Drake actually, down,
that actually might work out better for me, because then I'd be like the guy who turned down Drake.
Yeah.
I think the feature, I don't want to call it a trend because it's like more than a trend, but the idea of like the feature and like collaboration in that way is quite appealing to me. If Young Thug, I hope he's feeling better, by the way, because he's like having some medical issues recently. Mm-hmm. If he reached out to me and was like, yo, I want you to like do a verse on this track, I'd be like, okay. I think he's the most.
Would you rap, or would you still stay within your genre?
No, I mean, I think that, you know, like that. The like form of having like the rap verses and the sung choruses is fucking genius. I don't know who thought of that like originally. Like, I'd like to actually look that up to see like what the first song was that had like a catchy, like a hooky chorus, and then someone rapped for a verse and then back to the chorus, you know, that whole thing. Because that's like ingenious.
Yeah.
I mean, like, what's that? Friends of the Monster inside of my head. No, can we pretend that airplanes in the night sky?
Oh, B.O.B. and Paramore, right? Yeah. What's the lead singer from
Paramore? When I first heard that, I was like, this fucking, whoever's singing this is so smart that they jumped on this song. Like, that's genius. Because no one wants to hear, like, people would rather hear a rap verse than a sung verse, but they'd rather hear a sung chorus than a rap chorus, right? Yeah. To me. So anyway, yeah, I don't know. Any rapper who like wanted me to sing a chorus, I would absolutely pounce on that shit. I would be so fucking down.
Doesn't sound like a bad collaboration.
Jake, I'm glad you're recording, because we're gonna keep this, because when I start rapping, I'm gonna hit up Henry and be like, well, I'm ready.
Hop on it.
My mixtape's ready. I'm ready.
Remember what you said? Receipt.
What?
Here's collab.
The receipt. Here's the receipt.
Yeah. And we're running out of time here.
I actually had a ton of questions. I mean, since big time here is on a tight schedule.
No, hey, he's a hard man to book.
Kobe's anniversary. Speaking that you're in LA, Jake, you as well. To give us some Kobe memories and what Kobe not being here means to you.
That's a heavy one, man. To be honest, I was not the only person who shed many tears the day that I found out that he died. It was like, you know what? I'm not going to talk about the like sadness of that day. I think what's more important is to like remember what he meant to every single person who ever like was influenced by him or encountered him in any way. Mm-hmm. You just hear these stories today from people saying that like, oh, he is the most influential person that I ever knew in my entire life. Mm. 'Cause there's something that he was able to do, which I think is really the apex. It's like the pinnacle of like human existence, which is he married hard work, the hardest work, with creative expression. Like, he was able to be artistic with how he played basketball, but also work at it like a true craft. It was if he was a carpenter, right? Or something, like someone with a trade skill, an expert painter. He was like Picasso mixed with fucking Bill Gates or something, you know? And I don't know. And just those kinds of people, man, they come onto this earth once every 200, 300 years.
It's once every generation. Really. It's a generational person that you
I think
just
he's
never
even
really
more
see.
Than a generational person to me. I think he is, he exists outside of that kind of thing. Like, he is a mythical like being.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing I was going to say was everything you said, you know, kind of captures how I feel about Kobe. But Vic said, what's a personal story? And I remember when I was like 8, I was in the high five squad, the Lakers playing the Clippers. And The high five squad is like they find like 10 kids and they bring them down to the floor level. And you get to high five the players when they run out of the tunnel. And then you get to chill behind the bench. And just like talk to them and just
during a game, them.
Before it's like during warm up, like pregame, shooting and stuff. And
that's,
it's just
that's
but the thing was like,
forward about that. That sounds
it amazing. Just happened. And I don't, we just knew somebody who saw us and like brought us down. And I just remember like being in Kobe's presence was one of those things. Like Shaq was there, high five all these guys was super cool, but there's something about Kobe where like he's this god, he's this mythical figure. But seeing him in person, seeing his dedication to his craft kind of in a way shows you like this is a human being. This is somebody who just works very, very hard. Yes, he has talent and skill, but the work ethic is something that you can create for yourself.
Yeah.
That, you know, it showed you like he's human. You know, he really is a human being. He doesn't just walk out here and just make every shot he takes. He doesn't not stretch. Like, he participates and goes above and beyond and stays after hours, gets there before everybody. So you kind of see like, all right, this work doesn't just come naturally. He actually works hard for it. And I think that was one of the things that I take away from him.
Yeah, word. That's actually so, I love that, because like it wasn't as if he just was born this way, didn't he? Just coasted by and he got to the top. It was like he had the talent of someone who was like born with that kind of talent, and
he worked
through the human element too.
Yeah, took it to another level.
It's unbelievable.
It's kind of crazy to think about because of like as a person who does pride themselves on work ethic, like he was crazy about it, right? Like his was on a different kind of plane, right? Like you would think like because when you talk about like so at basketball, for example, you talk about players. And people want to say, like, an example would be Steph Curry. People say, like, oh, you know, everyone, you know, Steph's, like, the guy that, like, the random 28 can go in the gym and play like Steph Curry because Steph's not 6'11". He doesn't have a 7-foot wingspan. Can't jump super high. Like, you know, all that. He, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And Kobe had Kobe was talented. Yes, like you said, Kobe had that, like, generational talent.
Yep.
But he also had, like, a skill that we all could have. But nobody is ever going to, like, match up to, like, that work. Like, that work ethic is unbelievable, right? Yeah. Like, it's almost like he had a skill that could be emulated but won't be emulated, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Like, you know, like, you hear – yeah, yeah. Like, you hear the stories about Kobe, like, working and really, like, just his thought process. Obviously, the mama mentality, but, like, him saying going to the Olympics on a stacked Olympic team.
Yeah,
waking up at three in the morning, working out until 5, and then having practice at 7. Him just sleeping at the gym, rolling into practice, killing everybody, and then shooting again after. And like that was his like routine. You know, it just was.
My one of my favorites was the Jay Williams story where Jay like reached out to somebody to get into a gym before their game. Like he wanted to get in at like 5 a.m.
Oh yeah, and he thought he was like
I'm gonna be the only one in here. Like I got this book. Kobe found out he was going, and Kobe was there. Like 2 hours earlier or an hour earlier. And by the time he got there. Kobe was drenched in sweat and he had Jay beat that moment. When Jay saw him, he was like, oh God, this is going to be a long night.
Yeah, nah, it's fucking done, wrap.
It's done.
But yeah, I don't know, Vic, do you have any other ones?
I wish I had a story. I don't really have any Kobe. I never like interacted with him or met him or anything. He just was.
Yeah.
I mean, for, you know, just quickly, someone growing up in LA as well, he's like a local hero too.
Yeah.
So not only is he like this global citizen, this guy who is influential to people around the world, and also someone who spoke like 5 languages, you know, he's like, he's also, by the way, an academic genius.
Yeah. Incredibly smart.
Just side note, spoke 5 languages. But, you know, he was also like, he like represented LA. It was like the best thing in the world, dude.
Yeah. And he was like Mr. LA.
He was Mr. LA, dude. He was Mr. LA.
I also loved how you either loved or hated him. Like, it wasn't like, Kobe's all right. You either like love Kobe or you like hate Kobe.
People hated him. Like, a lot of kids, you know what's interesting, actually, is a lot of kids, like, in my high school, it's like if their parents were from the East Coast, like Knicks fans, Celtics fans, or whatever, fucking despised Kobe because their parents were like, oh, Kobe Bryant, like ball hog, like that, you know?
Yeah.
And then we always took the angle of like, no, like, you know, he's the Mamba mentality, et cetera, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, man, special human being.
May he rest in peace.
A tough loss, for sure. Yeah. I don't even know how to transition from that, but...
Glad we talked about it, to be honest.
Me too.
It's necessary.
There is one thing I did want to ask you before we finished up, Henry. You also act, or you at least acted in an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, yeah.
What's the story behind that, first of all? And second of all, from what I've heard, it's a lot of improv on that show, right? So how much of that scene was improvised? How much wasn't? And just kind of take us through that.
Sure.
Can someone tell me what Curb Your Enthusiasm is?
Curb Your Enthusiasm is the show that Larry David did after Seinfeld. He's the guy who created Seinfeld. You'd know it. If you saw, you
would love Curb Your Enthusiasm.
You would you would love it, dude.
Okay.
It's so funny.
I'm all of you, that's why I haven't seen it.
And Charlie's in it too. Charlie wasn't in it, was he? No.
Nah.
No, he wasn't. Sorry, I mixed it up. Charlie was in.
I'm Australian, mate. I haven't seen it. I'm Australian, mate.
Yeah, he did. Vic's, he's got the Australian radio team coming in there. He's like pure Australian media. Cole Kidman's going to come hang later. No, but yeah, that was really wild of honor to have been on that show and act opposite of Larry David, which is bizarre to say. Basically you're given like a skeleton of a
auditioned, right? Or it wasn't just you just got the part, right? Okay.
I read for it, yeah. Basically they give you like an outline of what the scene is with like one line that you're supposed to say, and then they're like, say basically like land this line, like say this one line to, you know, that like will helps the story basically, and then just like go off and do whatever you want. And I actually, in our first, there was like a lot of blocking involved. Like I had to like be in an ambulance and like get out of the ambulance and like put coffee, like be holding coffee cups. Like it was a little bit complicated for how short of a scene it was. Yeah. And my first, I was like, okay, I don't know why. Oh my God. It's like, it gives me like, makes me cringe thinking about it. The first take, Larry says like, where do you, you know, you think you can park here or something? And I'm like, fuck you. That's what I said to him. I just like went full out and was like, fuck you. And like walked away. And
no.
Immediately, like I thought I was like, I'm going to like just, you know, take it to him like, right off the bat. Immediately I knew that I'd blown it, basically. Like that I wasn't supposed to do that. The director came up to me and was like, okay, like take it down a notch. Don't do that. Do anything else other than that, basically.
Whoa, all right. Yeah, new guy.
It was total like new guy vibes, like trying to.
Hey, at least you went for it.
Yeah,
you went all in.
Hopefully I garnered a little respect for that. But then, yeah, we just did like sort of little improv-y bits after that couple takes. It was really fun.
Oh, that's good. That's actually really funny.
I
love the backstory behind it, because otherwise you would have no idea that you got one opportunity to say a line. The first thing you thought was fuck you.
And then
you got in trouble and had to like reset.
Yeah.
Is that something that you look forward to doing more of, more acting?
Yes and no. I don't really, all the sort of like emotional benefits and extrovert, introvert, all these different complexities, things we've been talking about with music, don't really feel that with acting personally. I don't really, when I am acting, I don't feel as much stuff as I do when I'm playing music. So I'm not really trying to pursue it so much, because I think you have to really love it and care. I mean, that's very competitive, obviously, to like be an actor. And I think the first thing is like, you've got to fucking love it, you know? And I don't really, I love it, but I don't love it, I would say.
That makes sense.
I mean, I like fucking around and like doing bits and stuff with like you guys and like my friends, but like that's enough for me, you know? I'm not like dying to do it on camera.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much for the time. I don't know if you have any other questions or thoughts or anything else you want to get across on this episode.
Can I ask you guys one football question before I go?
Yes. You know Vic's going to just talk about the Bears. So, but go ahead.
God, I swear, if you bring up the Bears, and it's a positive thing. Do the Kansas City Chiefs, are they the best football team you've ever seen? And if they are or if they aren't, what do you love watching about the Kansas City Chiefs?
This is such a question that's biased into me saying something about the Bears.
It's a trap.
You just asked a question about the Bears.
About one team that is not the Bears.
I mean, I haven't watched enough Chiefs. I haven't watched enough Chiefs. I just know that Patrick Mahomes is like, I would hate to go against him in a Super Bowl. So they are incredible, and he is just that amazing. But with that said, I'm going with Tom for this one. So I know it sounds crazy. I'm going with Tom.
I'm hammering the Bucs. I'm betting $200 on the Bucs.
So that doesn't really answer your question.
I'm going with the Buccaneers as well.
Okay, I don't bet against Tom.
Well, no, I'm going with the Buccaneers because they have the most diverse coaching staff in the NFL. Yeah, the four black coaches. And they have four black coaches. All three of their coordinators are black. And then they have two female full-time staff coaches.
Even better. Make it 400.
So I'm going with the Bucks. So I'm rolling with the Bucks. And personally, I don't think the Chiefs are as dominant as they were last year, but they are still very good. I think they have a more consistent running game now with Edwards-Helaire and Bell, who's more of a late down back, but still their defense is pretty good. I don't know. Like obviously, I think it'll be a good game, but I think it'll be a shootout. I'm expecting a lot of points.
I agree. I think it might be like 31 to 35 or something like that.
I think the Buccaneers win unless you get bad Tom. He's taking too many chances and he's throwing picks.
No risk it, no biscuit, baby.
We will see. And this episode will air after the final result of that game, so we'll have to listen back.
All right. Yeah, I think gun to my head, the Chiefs are winning, but I'm betting the box.
Gun to my head, Chiefs. No faith. Gun to my head, I had the Bears beating the Packers in the playoffs too.
Oh, we can't even get into all that.
I hope not.
Oh, man.
All right, Henry. Well, thank you for joining the show. I hope you enjoyed it, and we'd love to have you back in the future.
Of course. This is so much fun. Major, major, major shout out to both of you guys. Love you both. And hey, let's make this a streak, Vic. It's your first dub, but next game's your second dub.
Well, yeah. I mean, Latrell Sprewell should have won MVP. Don't ask.
Finally, a Latrell reference.
All right, guys.
2021.
All right, brother.
All right, appreciate it, y'all. Peace. Thanks, everyone, for listening along for this episode. If you would like to follow along with the brand, follow us on Instagram at Bristol Studio and at 94 More Podcast. This podcast is presented by Bristol Studio, sound editing by Rashad Allen, music by James Grissom.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll be inviting everyone over. From barbecues to girls' night, the kids can even host their friends.
Whoa, it smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy, the way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.